I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. I'm really pleased that my next guest is joining us now. He's the longtime host of BC Almanac on CBC Radio 1, Mark Forsyth. I used to rail against the CBC as it annoyed me for a number of years, but I have to admit I've gained a bit of a fondness and appreciation for it in the last year or so. Their local programming is terrific, and for local, national, and international news, it's great. I still listen to IMUS, but BC Almanac is a regular listen of mine throughout the week. It's a great view onto the province and the people therein. It's truly a province-wide program, and there's no better time to check in with its host than now during this election and referendum campaign. Mark Forsyth is also the author of three previous books, British Columbia Almanac, and with Greg Dixon, the BC Almanac Book of Greatest British Columbians, and The Trail of 1858. The show airs in the Pacific time zone at noon to 2 p.m. on CBC Radio 1. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Mark Forsyth. Good morning, Mr. Forsyth.
Hey, Joe. Glad to hear that we finally captured you as a listener.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if you didn't do that Pacific Mountain time zone thing, I would forget that BC is, I'd forget how big the province is, I guess.
You know, you're absolutely right. And if we don't say it, then the people who live in the Mountain time zone say, you know, those guys on the coast, they don't care about us at all. So, and it changes, too, actually, from depending what time of the year it is. The Peace River region doesn't actually shift time, so half the year it's Pacific time, and the other half it's Mountain time. But anyway, you're right. It's a big, beautiful province.
Hey, you're not from B.C. originally, right?
That's right. I was born in Ontario, Orillia, Ontario, which is where Gordon Lightfoot was from. I never lived there, but that's where I was born, and for my young days, grew up in Toronto, terrible Toronto, I know, till my mid-teens or so. Lived at St. Clair and Bathurst in Toronto, for anybody listening. That was a great neighborhood. It was sort of this intersection of Little Italy and Forest Hills and Jewish District as well. It was a wonderful place to grow up, and there was this ravine about a block and a half away from us, so I was living in the city, but as a kid, was exploring this green belt that at one time was threatened with a freeway. It was called the Spadina Expressway, and it was, when I was just a kid in the 60s, it was an issue, but I think maybe my first awareness that, you know, conservation of a green belt like that was something to really think about, and it was saved, in fact.
And what brought you to BC?
Well, after I went to college in London, Ontario, and I lived in Quebec for a couple of years in my mid-teens as well, you know, I went through a communications program and was looking for my first job. I had come to British Columbia as a 12-year-old. My aunt and uncle were married out here, and I came across on the train with my brother and my mother and my grandparents, and it was just an amazing journey. I just, as you're 12 years old and traveling across the country and getting a sense of its scale and the vast prairies and then the mountains. I remember the train stopping at Mount Robson and the conductor pointing up to the mountaintop and saying, you know, that glacier up there is 500 feet thick, and I thought he was lying, but of course it was right, and we ended up in Vancouver, and my first exposure to the ocean and a day on Galliano. And I think when I was 12, the seed was planted that I would like to come back here someday. And it was when I was 19, actually, that I was looking for my first job in private radio. I trained to work in private radio initially. And the first letter I sent out to Smithers, they said, come on. We want you. And I took the train. My grandparents, God bless them, they paid for my coach seat. I sat up all the way across the country on that trip and got off the train in the Bulkley Valley of Smithers. I don't know if you've been there, Joe, but it is truly one of the most beautiful parts of our province. And you get off the train and you look up at Hudson Bay Mountain, and this kid coming from Ontario where, you know, a mountain is truly just a molehill. I was captured right away by that place and ended up staying and living in north central BC for the first 10 years of my radio work in private radio and worked at CJCI in Prince George and was the program director there. And it was a really community-oriented station. It did a lot of good work, a lot of good programming in that part of the province. But I had always listened to CBC growing up, and my mother had it on, and I found myself always wanting to listen to CBC, even though I was working in private radio, because public broadcasting, I think, is really important and fascinating, usually good listening. So after 10 years of working in private, I applied with CBC and started with them in Prince Rupert 25 years ago today.
That's right. I heard that on the program. The thing about radio being important and it mattering, I mean, ever since the dawn of television, people have said that radio's dead, but it still does matter, doesn't it?
I think so. I think it's becoming even more important when you look at what you can watch on television. Like, do you want to watch any of that stuff?
Right.
I'm perhaps being somewhat arrogant there. I do watch television, and I especially like watching News World and the documentaries that are featured there on The Passionate Eye, for instance. That program I really do appreciate. And I like watching good movies and things, but there's just so much garbage on television right now. And at least with CBC Radio, we try and put some thoughtful programming on the air that it's not all deadly earnest. That there is some entertainment there to a certain extent when it's warranted. But I just think radio is just so much more personal, and you can connect with people in a totally different way that you can't on television. There's just something about the human voice that captures you, and I think it takes you inside people's minds and thinking and their lives in a different way. And one of the great advantages of radio has always been its immediacy. You know, nobody can really get at things more quickly than radio can. As far as CBC goes, we have our highest listenership ever. So that tells me that we're becoming even more relevant to more Canadians. On the television side, things are becoming much more fragmented and splintered. There isn't really the one place you go, I think, in the same way that people do with CBC Radio, to feel connected to a separate kind of community of people.
Yeah. You mentioned the ratings book that just came out recently, and for the first time, as you said, CBC Radio 1 in this market came out number one.
I'm talking about across the country, really, yeah. That our numbers are very, very good.
And your own show, BC Almanac, how is that in Vancouver? Is that number one in its time zone there, a time slot, I should say?
It wouldn't be number one, no, in its time slot. I think it's like number four or five, something like that, but something that's interesting about our program is that it's actually more listened to outside of Vancouver. Like, one-third of our audience comes from the Metro Vancouver region. The other two-thirds comes from Kelowna and Parksville and Fort Nelson, from different parts of the province. And it's really the only part of the day that listeners to CBC actually get to hear the whole province talking back and forth to each other. Cheryl McKay does the North by Northwest program on Saturday and Sunday mornings, and certainly she connects the province too, and a lot of her stories are about the arts scene in particular, whereas, BC Almanac, we have a lot of open line parts of our program throughout the week, and it's really the only place that people can speak around the province to each other. But it's quite remarkable when you get outside the Lower Mainland just how strong that connection is to CBC Radio in the smaller communities. They don't have as many options, but having lived in smaller communities myself, like Prince Rupert and Smithers and Prince George, when you're listening in those communities, you do want to feel connected to what else is going on in the rest of the province. So I think that's in part also what drives a lot of people to CBC outside the Lower Mainland.
Now, we've heard of these cuts to the CBC recently, and unfortunately local programming has been affected. How will it affect BC Almanac?
Well, it's sad to say it's going to be cut in half. We're going to go from a two-hour program to 1 hour. We'll go from roughly a four-person crew to a two-person crew. This is being done right across the country in the noon hour time slot as a money-saving initiative. And to be honest, I'm still trying to absorb that, because in my mind it really seriously cuts into our mandate to be a regional broadcaster in British Columbia. you know, we as you pointed out at the beginning, you know, we cover international issues and national issues, but we are also very much a British Columbia service. So that fragments that more so, and we're facing some difficult times right now with you know, we have a huge budget shortfall, and this is the kind of hard decision that has been made at the top, and I may not be happy with it, but and I know that many of our listeners are not happy with it, but it's a reality that we have to face. So now we have to determine what might we be able to do in 1 hour that is going to provide people with what they want to hear. So we still have to think that through, how we're going to be able to pull that off.
It's just a shame to have it cut down to 1 hour, I must say. Are you finding on the show, when callers call in, that they're paying attention to this election and referendum campaign?
The referendum campaign, yes, they are paying attention to STV. We have had a couple of open line discussions about it, and no shortage of commentary on both sides. Actually, it's not a slam dunk by any means, but there's definitely engagement there, and also on the economy and the carbon tax. We just did what we also do is dial up newspaper editors in different parts of the province, and today we spoke with folks in Richmond and Comox Valley and Terrace. And to be honest, at this stage in the campaign, the average person isn't really tuned in yet. But when you start talking about individual specific issues, it seems they respond. You know, it's been said that, you know, people are more intrigued by the Canucks right now than they are by politics. And so close on the heels of the federal election, people are weary, perhaps. But this always happens as we build through a campaign. People start getting more focused, and they become more interested. There was also an interesting discussion we had today about what's happening within the environmental community. There's quite a split there. Some of them saying that the NDP's decision to be opposed to the carbon tax is the wrong idea at exactly the wrong time. Other environmentalists who are worried that you know, the Liberals will return to power, and their perception is that their policies are hurting the environment, whether it's you know, wild fish stocks or what's happening with run of river projects around the province. And traditionally, I think it's fair to say that the environmental vote has you know, gone to the NDP by and large, and to the Greens to some extent. And there are environmentalists who support the Liberals too, but there's an interesting fracture within that community right now that we were talking about on today's show.
Yeah, and from people that I've talked to here, it's interesting to note that a lot of those disaffected environmentalists who voted NDP or Green are going to go to the Liberals, perhaps. Do you find when you talk to your listeners and so on, the people that call in on air and off, that they're concerned with issues or with personalities, like the leaders, for example?
Yeah, I think both, Joe. I think that people have strong feelings one way or the other about Mr. Campbell or Ms. James. We're not hearing much commentary yet on the leader of the Green Party. They're phoning about that, but they're also phoning when we put the issue up. If we pick the right issue that they want to talk about, they will respond. And we're going to see what happens on Tuesday, for instance, when we look at crime and punishment, which, given what's been happening with you know, the gang shootings, etc., in the Lower Mainland in the last few weeks, I am sure that there will be a lot of response. And we had two judges on our program this week during Law Week, the Chief Justice from the Supreme Court of BC, Justice Brenner, and the Chief Judge from the Provincial Court, Judge Stansfield, and lots of calls and lots of concerns expressed. Some people feel that the justice system is not serving them, and so I think that'll be a good issue that, ironically, I guess provincially, the province doesn't have a lot of control over, because these are federal laws that often we're talking about, but people seem to want to talk about crime right now.
You mentioned the success of the Canucks, and people are interested in that. And it's interesting that I shouldn't say it's interesting, but do you notice that there's a lot of apathy or just disengagement on this election campaign?
I think so. I think there's always a, part of our listenership is always kind of keyed into politics and wants to talk to us about politics. But when you walk down the street and talk to people, and certainly CBC television and radio have done this, ask people, are you engaged or not? And a lot of people aren't. We had the chief electoral officer on our program this week as well, and he told us that 58% of British Columbians voted last time. That means that 42% didn't, and what they did after the last election was canvass those people who didn't vote. And the number one reason they said they didn't vote was because they didn't feel engaged. So I think that that's always the case, that there will be, a significant number of people who don't feel engaged for whatever reason. And maybe it's our fault as the media that we're not presenting issues in an interesting enough way, an engaging enough way to grab their attention. But there probably always will be people who think, things are going fine, I don't really care, and we'll leave it to somebody else to elect who's going to be governing the province. But I think that's unfortunate that, in a working democracy, you want as many people as possible to have their say through their vote. Look at South Africa had, 80% turnout this week in their vote. We're at 58%. That actually is getting a little bit better. It was even worse the election before that. There could perhaps be a bit of a turnaround in voter engagement. But the chief electoral officer also did indicate that he is worried about what's happening with young people, that people between 19 and 25, 30, that's a group that is choosing more and more to stay disengaged and to not vote. So that's definitely a worrisome trend.
And then the people on the yes side of the STV thing, they say that if we change the system, this will make young people vote. Now, whether those young people go out and vote on the 12th, that's we don't know that yet, and we don't know whether they will vote or not, right?
We don't. We did have phone calls from people, though, who said, I don't want to vote for anybody in my riding because I can't support them, but I will vote on the referendum question. It was a very close vote last time. What was it? Points off.
Yeah, right? It was 58%. Yeah.
So, I think there is definitely an interest in looking at the possibility of doing things in a different way, and maybe young people are more interested in that. If there's a sense that through STV somehow there will be more proportional representation, the critics would argue, well, there isn't going to be. It's just a variation on a first past the post. But if that happens, if it does pass and it appears that your vote has more power and more flows from it, that may encourage more people to get engaged.
On St. Patrick's Day, you had someone on and they made a stew and you made a soda bread.
Yeah.
Do you have that recipe? Is it on the BC Almanac website?
It's not. It's in one of my wife's cookbooks. And I should know it because it's so simple, right?
Right.
But it's there in my wife's cookbook, and you can do soda bread any number of ways, right? It's pretty basic, just some flour and some water, and I think I put a little bit of lemon in there, and to create some acidity cut to it. You can do it in about 20 minutes. I can send you the recipe.
Would you?
I will do that.
Yeah, because I still remember that show. It's over a month ago now, but I still remember it. Mark, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Congratulations on 25 years at the CBC, and we'll continue listening to the show.
Thanks very much. It's great that you asked me to speak with you today.
It's been a pleasure. BC Almanac airs throughout the province on CBC Radio 1. It's in Vancouver. It's on from noon to 2 p.m. It's host Mark Forsyth on the line. I'm Joseph Planta.